seems to matter.
It's a matter of time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Watchmen 1 minute at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Eric Nash from the upcoming Almost Famous Minute.
And I'm Jonathan Howell from Minute Impossible and the Billy Crudup Fan Club.
I can't wait till your guest spot on Almost Famous.
Oh, me either. That movie has, luckily, there's a lot that does not have him in it.
Are there any other movies by minutes that have him in it?
Prometheus.
Well, I mean,
no.
you're coming up.
Yeah.
On it, and I guess Coulson will.
Yeah, is he doing Prometheus? I know he's doing Prometheus, but then is he doing Alien Covenant afterwards?
I would assume.
I don't mind that one because dies. Because
it's got David in it,
right?
So.
Yeah.
Started to spoil Prometheus. David survives.
Yeah.
when he's straight up murdered, I'm good with that. Mm. I'm such a sadistic person about Billy Crudup in his career. Like, good. I'm glad you're dead, Billy. Mm,
right. And murdered guy. In that way.
Yeah.
I'm glad it was painful, Billy. You didn't go out in your sleep.
Well, minute 83 starts with Agent Forbes questioning Laurie and ends with Laurie watching Eddie leave the Watchmen Minute. the Watchmen Minute.
Uh-oh.
We're getting meta.
Snake is eating its tail. It ends with Laurie watching Eddie leave the Watchmen meeting. Man, that's hard to say. Watching Eddie, yeah. Watchmen meeting. Yeah, so we've already talked about the ping pong table in the forest.
Mm-hmm. And that's in the special talent quarters?
It is, yeah.
I was looking at the script you guys were kind enough to send over, and I was like, special talent quarters, that's an interesting name for what it was.
Straight out of the book. That's when Rorschach breaks the glass like door, glass window when he's breaking in earlier. It says special talent quarters.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Well, she brings his head down onto the table. I guess she's grabbing his tie.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're talking about the expense paid for this room, for the decoration of this room, and I guess the ping pong table too, because if you'd done that to any of the ping pong tables I played on, the table would have collapsed.
Right.
So that's a nice sturdy ping pong table there.
I think aren't the really nice ones like it's almost like a pool table, aren't they? Like where it's like a slate. Like a piece of slate or something like that. I don't know. So yeah, it would be a hard. That'd be a hard hit. I love the Foley here as the ping pong ball. You just hear it like pinging across the table as his head hits it or as she releases him,
like dislodges from wherever it was sitting.
Mm-hmm. Love that. I love when she releases him. Just the. First thing he does is smoke.
So. Yeah, that's let's talk about the line first that gets him there. Mm. He says to her, it's when you're on government payroll and you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
And then she implies that he's calling her a whore.
Sure.
And that she's not doing her job, which is, I guess, to keep him wooed.
Happy, yeah.
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 I never really – do you think of her as that way? Was her entire job with this?
I think that's how she feels. She feels like she mentions this with in her dinner date with Dan. You know that she's her job is to keep the country's most powerful weapon happy. You know, so yeah, I think she resents her lot in life. You know, she didn't want to be a costume adventurer because that's what her mother wanted. She doesn't want to. Just live in this little lab and apartment, you know, just keeping him happy. So I think she's stuck in this place where she's frustrated. She doesn't know who she is or what her, you know. I think that's one of the most important things, I think, with her character is when she finally says to John, like, you know, that's not her job anymore. You know, basically when she leaves him, you know. So, mm-hmm. It's when she finally takes control and says, I'm not going to do that anymore. So,
well, she's definitely taking control in this scene.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah.
I like her persona that is so different than it was at the beginning. I mean, when we see her in different time periods, the 10 years have not been, 15 years have not been kind to her. She's been worn out emotionally, it feels like.
Oh, yeah.
She's just much, much harder. I mean, but she's all smiles in later minutes we'll get to.
Yeah.
She's all smiles for everybody. And, you know, she always bats her eyes. And I think she's also playing like a younger person. If she is supposed to be 15 or 16 or 17 or whatever age she is in this at the beginning, she's playing it well.
Yeah.
She's playing this doe-eyed, you know, little girl. And now she's just this. She's just over it. She has mom issues.
Yeah, yeah. So,
don't we all?
One thing I don't love in terms of, I mean, it's very few things in this movie I don't love. In the editing in this minute, it's a little Edgar Wright, which is a style that I'm perfectly happy with in an Edgar Wright movie, but it's when he pulls out the pack of cigarettes and the lighter and then the slam down on the table. Like, it's all very quick cut that I don't think works for this scene or this most of this movie. We don't get that a lot. And so
why was there such a focus in on the cigarettes? I understand the cigarette lighter.
Right.
Like, the lighter makes sense because that was taking her back to a memory.
Right.
I didn't understand the significance of that. You can actually hear the, I love good Foley work. You can actually hear the cigarette coming out of the pack. He's like, cigarette. What's that? Is that meant to be something?
I don't know. I don't.
Is there something I'm missing?
I don't think so. I think it was just a weird editing choice to zoom in on it, you know, just an artistic choice to say, we really need that shot of the cigarette slowly being slid out of the pack, you know. I don't know.
All right. I just didn't know. I think because it's given the same weight as the
next
shot, which is the cigarette being lit, and that's kind of reminding her of the fire and of the comedian's cigar.
It just made me think that in the book, Take a Drink, when the younger Lori and Eddie have their little moment in their flashback outside, like, you know, getting to know each other a little bit, she's asking him for a light in the book, like, because she's smoking at the time, even then.
Hmm.
So maybe it's.
Well, I wonder if they had that shot and they just
maybe
didn't work.
Yeah,
and then even in the director's cut, they're like, "Well, it's still terrible."
Yeah, yeah, and she doesn't smoke at all in the movie, you know, whatsoever. Whereas in the book, she smokes, you know, constantly. Like, she's always smoking.
Like her mom.
Yeah, yeah. So, man, okay. I don't know. Yeah,
maybe just something on the cutting room floor, or maybe the actress. Yeah. Just like, I'm just not doing that.
Yeah.
That could easily happen in a movie where an actress who's been asked to smoke, it's like, no. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Shoot around it. I love this scene because I love anything with the comedian.
Sure.
He's great. He is my anti-Billy Crudup. He's my favorite character of this movie. But Rorschach is so awesome too. Mm. It's hard for, I think Rorschach is my favorite casting of this movie, whereas the comedian is my favorite character.
Okay.
Even though he's not in the movie a ton, I love this characterization.
Yeah. When he's so much, he's the center of everything. Like, it's, you know, whether or not he's there, like, it's still so much about him. So.
Well, yeah, because it's supposed to be like, you know, Dr. Manhattan is beyond us. The comedian is us. It's this tragic figure that uses comedy or is just a smartass to cover that he's messed up. Now, are we as murderous as the comedian? No. But in this alternate hyper-violent reality, yeah, we are. We're this guy who made a couple mistakes and got some money, got some fame, but lost everything else he ever wanted. Hmm. And he plays it well. And we only get a little taste of it in this minute and then in the next minute a little bit.
I love that this is one of those flashbacks that it's not the same thing we've had before. Like, even, you know, he lights the map on fire, and that's pretty much the same. It might be a slightly different angle of watching the map burn. But watching him leave the room is completely different of an you know, as far as an angle, because it's more focused on Laurie, and then we get to see her reaction of the comedian in this meeting. So I really like that alternate take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have that happen in our movie once at the end of the movie when they remind, when they go through Ethan talking about who killed the team. And we see alternate takes from other angles. And I'm always a huge fan of that. In our movie, they actually shot it at the same time. Don't know if that happened here. Like, they actually, because they have an explosion in the background, and they shot it at the same time other action was going on and another angle, because it's the same explosion. And that sort of craft is impressive. Now, this was also 96, so CG wasn't going to be a factor.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in a movie like this, you can always just make it look kind of the same. So I'd always be interested if this was shot at the exact same time and they did it from two different angles. Probably not. They usually do it multiple times.
Yeah, I think based on the first time we see this shot, we would have basically been staring at the other camera that we are that is being used here in this flashback. So based on where the two scenes were shot from, they would have basically been pointing cameras straight at each other.
Yeah, I love the her reaction though.
Yeah,
it. I mean, I love her reaction in that it's icky and gross because we know how she's feeling, not knowing the truth about her own father.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What?
What? I think we lost you there.
What? What? What happened?
There's one little detail that I really like. In the book, she's got this like choker collar kind of thing. I don't know what you call them. I think choker necklace or whatever that she wears. It's got a little tiny skull like on it, and it's, I guess it's meant to tie into the specter nature of her persona. They don't really, it doesn't get, you know, a lot of focus or anything, but it's there. And the zipper, when you kind of zoom in on her in this minute, you see the zipper that she has that's zipped almost all the way up on her costume. And it kind of has that same skull shape, because she doesn't wear that you know, choker type collar. So they didn't have that skull there. So I think the detail is in the zipper, as a nod to
that's
that.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I love her costume.
Yeah, I do too.
We talked about it earlier, but the next couple of minutes, we're going to see it really close. And I just, it's so cool.
Actually, we have not talked about her costume that much because she hasn't been in her costume on screen that much.
She's not going to be in it much longer either, if you get my drift.
That's true.
But when she is in it, it's a very cool looking costume.
I'm glad they didn't go book route where it's like she wears kind of like a black swimsuit with a yellow gauzy like mesh see-through type blouse over the top of it and skirt. Like, I think it works.
That would have been very 80s.
Yeah.
This is a superhero costume.
Yeah.
So does she have the hots for all the men in the room? at some time or
not. Not Dan.
Dan? No,
she gave him the cold shoulder as soon as Manhattan arrived.
She's just not into owls, man.
Yeah. Clearly, no. I don't think she paid any attention to Rorschach.
Well, who does?
Yeah. Or even really
as a sexual object.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're just down to
Ozymandias. Ozymandias is a weird looking dude. Every time I see him in this movie, I'm like, is he CG? He looks like the Kamaloids from Star Wars, the ones who make the clones.
Oh.
He's got such a long neck.
Kaminoans.
Yeah.
Kaminoans. Oh, yeah, the Kamaloids are from Star Trek. Sorry. Oh my gosh, I just mixed up my two franchises. You nerd. Yes, Kaminoans. Kaminoans.
Yeah. Back to the, like, her experiencing this flashback, you know, that is triggered, I guess, by the lighter. Is this, so earlier we saw Manhattan when he's reaching out, touching her, and forcing her into a flashback. And we see brief little flashes, like tiny little glimpses, and they ranged from like seeing a man with a gun, seeing a night owl costume, and then you see a little glimpse of this, the map on fire. And so now you've got this fire and this lighter and everything, and is she experiencing a flashback and remembering the past that we see? And if so, is it because Manhattan, like, preempted it by giving her that glimpse earlier? So it's kind of like, which came first, the flashback or the memory, you know? I don't know how to phrase that, but I hope you get what I'm saying or get what I'm asking. Like, is she having this flashback because he planted that in her head?
I think so. I think it's a self-fulfilling.
Right.
She would probably not have noticed if she hadn't already seen the flashback. And it's like, what's this reminding me of? This reminds me of this. Because she saw it out of context before, and now she understands the context to have some sort of, you know, emotional reaction to it. And that emotion is the remembering of her first real encounter with the comedian.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we get a quick shot of the owl pod.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. I was trying to remember where it ended, if we saw any of young Lori, really. I guess we see her in the room with the smile and everything, but...
Yeah, that's all we see. Okay. It's her standing next to Ozymandias, Owlman.
Right. Okay.
And the comedian.
Cool.
Walking away.
Even though I made the note for it next minute, but I see him looking at it now. Rorschach in Archie was Night Owl. Yep. Rorschach on our left and Night Owl on the right.
Yep. I like seeing Rorschach in there with him. Any last thoughts on 83?
Not really. This one's not a lot to talk about on this one, because it all kind of steamrolls into the next couple.
Yeah, it's kind of like wrapping up last minute and preempting the next minute, kind of. Eric, you got anything else?
Well, I'm good.
Okay. Jonathan, tell us about the first time you read Watchmen, if you can remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm old enough to – it came out when I was at the perfect age.
Okay.
I would have been not a teenager yet, but a young kid collecting comic books. And I was collecting comic books at this point when the DC rebooted the DC Universe. And John Byrne did Superman and everything kind of changed. And this is kind of post-crisis of Infinite Earths. That's when I started. So this was right in my wheelhouse when this came out. This was 86, and I started reading Superman in like 85. So when it came out, I was not interested in it because of that. I was only interested in the glossy superhero, you know, archetype superheroes. I wanted Superman. I wanted Wonder Woman. I wanted Batman.
Sure.
I didn't want, at that age, an anti-hero. Didn't really float my boat as a comic
book. I'm sure characters that you've probably never seen before, even if you were maybe familiar with the characters they were based on. But yeah, this would, as a new thing, this would probably have like less appeal because it's not Superman and Batman and characters you know. So
yeah, it was DC. So I was a big DC head. So I remember seeing Who Watches the Watchmen posters and promos for it and not really understanding the reference. I remember not being into it because probably didn't understand. If someone at the comic book shop had been like, man, this thing's awesome. It's about guys who are like, yeah, this is how real people would be superheroes. I probably would have been sold on it. No one ever, at that point I was reading based on, I used to go to literally a Five and Dime and get my comic books. And it wasn't until 85. That's when I went to an actual comic book store. Like, my parents would drive me to a store, and I had an account, and I would get comics. So, yeah, this was probably 5 years ahead of where I should have been emotionally. Because later in high school, I was like, oh, I should be reading this. And I read it, and they're like, yeah, man, this is exactly how it should be. You know, they get it right. Alan Moore, you're a genius.
Yeah.
So that's where Watchmen, the comic book, started with me in the graphic novels.
Okay.
And then the movie I saw in the movie theater.
When it, like, first night, yeah, did you see it, or like opening weekend?
No, it wouldn't have been first night. Again, this was probably my same tepid response to when it originally came out as a comic book. I was like, oh, cool, they made this. And I was like, I probably wasn't paying attention either to who Zack Snyder. I probably didn't even know he directed that at that point.
Sure.
I might have known that. This was what, 2009?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was at least in the know about movies and things like that, but I may have only remembered him from 300 and these other movies.
Right.
And thought, oh, I should definitely go see this, though. But I remember I took my wife, so that usually means it was on a Friday night type of date night type of thing. So, and I know I saw it a second time with my dad, and that was awkward.
Oh, sure.
Because of the sex scene. But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But yeah, he wanted to go see it too, because he didn't know anything about it.
Right.
And I had to kind of explain to him what this was about. So yeah, that was my, I didn't super fanboy about this movie, but it's one of those movies I've owned.
Sure.
I still own it. I have a digital copy of it. I have a DVD of it. So it's one of those movies that's in, if it's superheroes, you know why? I think it's 90% Owlman. I love Owlman and I love Rorschach. And I think those two guys make the movie for me. I've said to so many people that I like the comedian. I like most of the characters. So
yeah,
even though I wasn't, it had been so long since I'd read the graphic novels. When I saw the movie, I didn't have that fanboy reaction of being angry at any changes that were made, which is probably a good thing too. Mm-hmm. Like, I was coming into it going, yeah, I remember them touching on this. I don't remember how this happened. You know, I hadn't reread it in forever. And then I reread it probably a year after I saw the movie. And I was like, oh, they did this.
Okay.
So
yeah, that's cool.
It's my normal level of nerdery probably got probably got slowed down because I hadn't read the comic book in so long.
Sure.
If I probably reread this in the past 5 years, I would have been there the first night.
All right, then. Can you come back Thursday?
Sure.
All right.
Is Billy Crudup up in the next minute?
Nope.
Sounds good. Book me.
Well, technically he is.
Oh, wait. Oh, you know what? Something just came
up. He just doesn't have a dialogue.
Sorry, guys.
Well, maybe.
I don't mind voiceover.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He is in it for 2 seconds.
Right.
I don't mind it. Anytime he's leaving, I'm if he's leaving or if something's bursting out of his chest, I'm all good.
Well, in that case, we'll talk to you tomorrow for minute 84. But until then, who watches The Watchmen?
We do.
We do.
We do. I'm watching you, Billy Crudup.
Watchmen are over.
Here's my heart on a silver.